Your SteveJonesShow.com podcast audio is loading now. Today's SteveJonesShow.com podcast audio is sponsored by Purdy Insurance, Market Street, Sunbury, and online at PurdyInsurance.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Swinak again, right side, lowers the shoulder, and the Nittany Lions answer. Touchdown, Penn State.
Back to pass, Kemberling. He hits a completed pass to Dunn. Dunn on the post pattern. He's gone. Touchdown, Shikellamy. 37 yards, and Dunn finishes the drive.
Hackenberg back, steps up, delivers deep down the middle. Robinson, 30-yard line, 25. Robinson down at the 23. It started with blitz pickup by Zach Swinak again.
Back to pass, Rapp, pressure's coming. He's going to throw it down the middle, picked off by Turber. Turber to the 20, to the 15, gets a block to the 10. Touchdown, Shikellamy!
Hackenberg turns. Swinak, left side, walks into the end zone. Touchdown, Penn State. The Nittany Lions get the touchdown they needed to cut the UCF lead in half.
43.2 to go. Third down and 8 from the Sealands Grove 38-yard line. Braves up a touchdown. Here comes the handoff. Holding the ball tightly as Turber. He's got the first down. Ball game.
Hackenberg gets the snap. Back to pass. Fade far corner for Robinson. Reaches up. He's got it. Touchdown, Penn State.
Yeah, you got to get one foot in bounds. You get both. I know what took so long to review that one. You're like, all right, how many feet you need? I mean, really? And he had control all the way through. Terry is with us. Terry at 800-795-9565. Welcome to the show, Terry. It's great to have you with us.
Hi, Steve. Good to talk to you.
Pleasure.
This is directed to both you and Kevin. Kevin, first of all, I know why they're really harassing you about the 20-minute line at the concession stand. I know the problem.
Okay.
I was right behind you, and we were in the men's line, men's room line.
So, darn it, that explains
I think
it.
That, up.
That explains
oh,
it.
My. No, that is why I called. You know, I left work here on Friday evening, and I don't get to listen to a lot of football. But I was listening to the Shikellamy. I tuned them in immediately. I'm actually a graduate of the first class of Shikellamy in 1966. And I have a heart there. And I went over to McDonald's across the river and had a hamburger, and I'm listening to the show. And I'm telling you, Kevin, you are absolutely amazing in your broadcasting. And you and Coach Hort, he is so academically attuned to the plays. And your excitement, it really makes for some outstanding broadcasting. I think Steve had mentioned that you're probably one of the better announcers for sports in the state. And I agree with him, and I'd even
yes.
go one further. If you and Coach Hort were to be compared, I would say U.S. I really mean that. You can make things exciting. And here's the thing that's so unusual. You might have a headache one day. On some Friday, you might have, you're not always on top of your game, but you always bring it off A+. And
well,
it's,
I appreciate that.
It is so
much.
Exciting.
You
may, and I'm telling you, most commentators was in high school football, it's like I'd sooner watch paint dry. And you guys keep it right there. And Steve, I mean, you're the same way. And I was listening to those two broadcasts you had on here just before I came on the air here. I don't know who's competing with who. I mean, it's almost hard to tell Steve from Kevin anymore. It's amazing. But Steve, you do an outstanding job in your play-by-play, and you're just as quick. I mean, it's like right being right there aside of the players. And after sitting over there at McDonald's the other night, I just have to call in here and compliment you guys. And then to have the best of the best, and then on Monday have a radio program together. I mean, how unusual is this?
Well, this is something that Roger put together, and I was thrilled about, and I wanted very much for Kevin to be a part of it, because I knew that I wanted to work with somebody that I thought was outstanding at it. That way I could have somebody for 2 hours carry me every week. So,
and then he found out what it was really like, and then it was like, I don't know. But no, Terry, I really appreciate it. And I'll tell you what, I have a lot of fun. I have a lot of fun doing Friday nights and basketball as well, and this show especially. It's the best part of my days.
You're good at it. Coach Hort, he's amazing. The combination of your personalities make it so interesting, because I'm listening to you, the excited. I'm getting my Big Mac almost slipped out of my hand, and I'm listening to his technical part. Every little detail he knows and how it unfolds, and that's a gift that you guys have that's very unique.
One of these days, we're going to do a contest with the Pottsville play. Every time Coach says Pottsville play, you're going to mark it down and then send us how many through the night, and you might win tickets to something. That's what we got to do one of these times. He goes, you know what that was? That was the Pottsville play. I said, well, 20 years ago, I didn't know what that was, but I do now.
Well, I'm going to get off here, but I do think the Chicken Lemmy Stadium should post the sign concession stand and men's room a little better so that you don't get mixed up down there. All right. Thanks, guys.
That's a good tip. I appreciate it. Thanks, Terry. Appreciate that.
Thank you for the kind words, and those are words that Kevin deserves very, very much. As I said, he's without question, the best high school announcer in the state, period. So
he does have that enthusiasm to every broadcast.
I think it's beautiful.
Steve,
I think it's beautiful.
Going back to the interview with Audrey, and as you said, it'll be on Penn Live all this week, the website for the Patriot News.
Mm-hmm.
One of the questions I have about in the music blaring, is there a risk for a home team to be penalized if it interferes with the game such that, not the crowd noise, that's what it is, but with that program music blaring out right where a quarterback can't hear or lineman can't hear the snap count, et cetera?
Well, to be honest with you, Bob, Penn State's been penalized for crowd noise before. They got penalized in 1993 for crowd noise against Michigan.
How do you penalize against crowd noise, though?
How do you penalize against crowd noise?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I've never heard of that penalty before. There's a penalty for crowd. I understand if it's the piped-in music like Bob's talking about, where you're controlling it, but this is the crowd noise. This is what college football and home field advantage in any sport's all about.
Yeah, but Kevin, this was back. You're going back 20 years now. So going back 20 years, that's when it happened. And I think they've amended the rules since.
I think
So it doesn't exist the way it did then. All
right. So it doesn't exist the way it did then. But it's, you have to be careful about, I think what Bob's talking about, you have to be very careful about it warping over into when they're trying to call signals. I think you do have to be careful with that. Now, we could sit here and do this, and in doing so, we may find out that the fans like it. So this is not me saying I have an opinion one way or the other. I don't have an opinion one way or the other, because the reason I don't have an opinion one way or the other is because you have the fans are the ones experiencing it. I have headsets on, so I can't hear it. And because I can't hear it, it's a little bit different. Can I hear it? Yes, but it's not predominant, all right, as opposed to being a fan. I know they're putting a new sound system in next year in which they'll evenly distribute the sound throughout the stadium, which is what they do need, because right now it comes out of the scoreboard in the south end, and so it's a little difficult, to kind of have it sent in one direction. There'll be a far more sophisticated sound system in the stadium next year. But at 800-795-9565, what is your opinion on the atmosphere in the stadium? Now, I would tell you right now, the fan-generated atmosphere is, I can tell you that, I can see it play out in front of me. It's unbelievable. It's incredible. It's great.
I don't have any problem with the piped-in music at all at the right times. I like the band, the mix with the band coming in as well. I think that's great. Now, what you have to watch is do any of the music that's being played, whether it's the band or the piped in music, does it happen while a huddle is going on or while the play is breaking from the huddle? Because I think I'm going to look this up for tomorrow because I can't do it right this second. But I believe there's a PIAA rule regarding the band playing and when they can play and when they can't play. I think once they break the huddle, the band has to stop playing in the PIAA. But I'm going to look that up to be sure.
And if you remember, Kevin, this happened a couple years ago at Lewisburg and Warrior Run up in the Bucknell Stadium.
And that was Warrior Run's band that had the, I believe, that they were having issues with.
And the Warrior Run coaches were having issues with
the Warrior Run
it.
Coaches,
And the coaches turned around and said something to the band director, and the coach ended up getting fired from Warrior Run. Steve, I'll tell you this.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
It really got nasty on the sidelines between the band director and the band playing and the coaches who were trying to call in plays for their own team. The sentiment, I think, of the fans that I talk to and see at the state at Beaver Stadium agree with Audrey and what she reported. The music blaring is inconsistent both in when it's played and the volume. And a lot of people do not like it, and everybody loves the Blue Band and would love to hear more of them. And that I think the sentiment is the Blue Band adds to the college football environment, but the music blaring, it's not a rock concert.
I like what Guido did with it. Yeah. I think what he did with the stadium atmosphere and the game day atmosphere changed it for the better.
Right.
I'm not sure it continued, though.
Mm-hmm. Well, part of that's feel. You have to have a feel for it.
Yep.
No question. Just like you have to have a feel in a broadcast as to when to get excited and when not. Sometimes you miss it. You know, sometimes you get it right. Let me
relate something that happened last week at Bloomsburg University at their home opener. They tried very hard to emulate Penn State by blaring some music in between plays. The fans on the Bloomsburg side were screaming at the press box where it was coming from, the section where it was coming from, to turn it off and shut it down. Now, they've never had that at Bloomsburg University, and typically they get 6,000 to 8,000 for a game, a big game, and the fans were highly displeased. It was it's a reaction because it's not happened before like that.
Now, I wonder if we'd get a different reaction from the students as opposed to others in the stadium, or if it's unified. I mean, I know the students, for one thing, do love the Blue Band. I mean, so I think everyone's unified on they always enjoy when they play. So I think there's a unification on that.
Mm-hmm.
But would there be a difference between someone who is maybe 17, about to turn 18 to 22, 23 years of age versus somebody who's in their 40s, 50s, or even their 60s as to how they feel about it? I mean, that's something, you know, maybe we have, is there an age disparity there, or are people unified in how they feel about it? One thing I did notice was the decibel level of it was certainly lower for game two against Central Florida. And that I can only tell because the first week, it was all over our microphones, and, you know, we're kind of looking at each other like we're trying to work here.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm broadcasting.
So, yes. Yeah. Somebody's got to work during this game. And no, it's. I think Kevin has it right. I think the game that comes to everyone's mind is the Ohio State game of 2005, I believe.
Yeah.
And a phenomenal atmosphere, and that was like the hallmark or the gold standard for crowd noise, crowd enthusiasm, crowd participation in the game. And then they've been, at least it seems like the last two seasons, this being the second season, they're tweaking it a bit.
Was that the night game in 05?
Yes, it was.
Daniel fell asleep in the stands during that game. I am not joking. The boy fell asleep. I have no idea how in the world he did that.
That's your kid. All right.
I just had to share that because you were talking. We joked about that ever since that time. We said, you know, I said, you were at that game. Yeah. I don't remember the second half. I said, you fell asleep. It was the noisiest game I've ever been to, and you fell asleep.
Steve, on just a tangent on that, what Audrey talked about, the crowd attendance on Saturday being announced at 92,000, in my opinion, is a totally bogus amount.
Well, every attendance, just so you know, Bob, across the country, whether it's Penn State, New Mexico State, Ohio State, Oregon State, it's always announced in everything, football, basketball, as tickets sold, just so everybody understands that.
But
it's
the crowd
sold.
Yeah, but it was comparing what I saw and what I've seen in games past, I think there were closer to 100,000 there.
Oh, you actually think there are more people?
Oh,
there?
Absolutely. Oh, my goodness, yes. And I also gauge it on scientifically by how many people are scalping tickets out front. It was hard to come buy tickets for the game out in front of the stadium.
And how long it takes Bob to get back to Danville. That's the other way he figures it out.
Yeah. But I was really surprised at the announced crowd. I have to say I thought there were closer to 100,000.
You thought there were more. Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that one I can't really tell.
It is what it is.
I can't tell.
Well, you know, last night's game, the Seahawks game and the Seahawks and 49ers game, actually, when you talk about crowd noise, Guinness recorded the crowd noise at 131.9 decibels in the first quarter. That's equal to a gunshot. And in the fourth quarter, they broke that Guinness record and made it 136.6 when Marshawn Lynn walked into the end zone for the second touchdown of the game. That's how it was louder than a gunshot for that stadium last night.
Now, one thing we haven't talked about, maybe we can do it in the next half hour just to make Kevin happy. Is there a Monday night football game?
No.
And who is playing?
Well, Cincinnati taking on the Steelers. And James Harrison plays for the Bengals. We'll come back with more in a moment.
You're funny.
Here on... I'm what?
You're funny. He's a dirty player.
You
know
mean Bob,
he's just a dirty player.
Yes, Kevin.
Player.
Or Steve.
Bob, did I make a statement of fact?
You did, and I didn't see any humor in it at all. I thought it was a very matter-of-fact, straightforward statement of something that is reality-based.
I think he should get a fine every time he touches Ben Roethlisberger.
Mentally, you're still in the concession line, aren't you? All right, today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. We'll come back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Ready for a quality pre-owned vehicle? Well, get them before they go to auction at Sunbury Motors. Go to sunburymotors.com and click on pre-auction blowout.
Like a Ford Fiesta four-door sedan, SEL, $11,995. 2006 Pontiac Solstice two-door convertible, super low miles, only $15,521. A one-owner 2011 Hyundai Sonata 2.4-liter hybrid for just $17,387. 2012 Ford Econoline cargo van, fully serviced, $18,996. 2010 Ford Explorer Sport Track 4-door, $24,352. And a 2011 Lincoln MKX with a 6-year, 100,000-mile warranty, just $34,882. Call 888-536-8017.
All come with a Carfax report and our lowest price promise. Pre-auction blowout. 24/7 at sunburymotors.com at the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at our dealership, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
Hi, this is Susan Purdy. For over 85 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. Our trained and knowledgeable staff has centuries of experience, so rest assured your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 286-5855, check us out online at purdyinsurance.com, or visit us on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
Well, I'll play this in the press box, I guess. So. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. You're the ones out there that live through this, first of all, the atmosphere you fans created at the game on Saturday was, unbelievable. It was great from start to finish. I'm right there.
You know, that game, Steve, was decided in a couple plays by literally inches. And the two plays from Saturday's Penn State game that were inches, both involved Sam Ficken. He attempted a 57-yard field goal, would have been a stadium record. And yeah. I was on the goal line in the north end where my seats were, and that thing just missed going over the crossbars.
He missed by about 2 feet,
Exactly right. Yeah. And then the second play was, and this I thought was incredibly mistaken by Central Florida, when Penn State scored their final touchdown.
I talked about
this. Exactly.
Before the kick.
Yeah, it was like onside kick. Well, and you were saying, and Jack Hamm, as part of the broadcast, don't kick it like an onside kick. Look where they're playing. Kick it over their heads. And that ball ended up, when Ficken kicked off, over the Central Florida backup guy, it must have just touched the goal line.
It did. It did. I actually was watching that, and I was thinking the same thing that you guys were, that just pop it over his head, and you're going to have a you're going to have the ball easy. And it literally went nose on the goal line and wobbled there.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, and of course, that would have been the game changer of game changers that would have made every highlight film for weeks in this country.
And strategically, I thought it was exactly the right thing for Penn State to do. I thought it was very smart.
Well, that came from the sideline because I saw I saw Coach O'Brien motioning, and then he'd hold up his clipboard so that nobody on the kick return team could see, and he was motioning to kick it deeper.
So those were two plays in a game that highlights and emphasizes the point you made earlier about not being as good as you are when you win and not being as bad as you are when you lose. So that some wise old sage football coach used to repeat all the time.
He did. He repeated it all the time. He said, look, you're never as good as you think you are when you win. You're never as bad as you think you are when you lose. He also told me one time, he says, Steve, he says, sometimes with we, meaning Penn State, doesn't seem like things are going well. He says, maybe the other guy's doing something right.
Well, Central Florida certainly did.
And they did things right. And should get credit for the things they did do right. And the other thing he told me, there are a thousand of these, by the way, was that, look, he says, youth is a disease, and it's curable. All right? Well, it's a young football team in a lot of spots. Bill O'Brien and his group will cure it. Through pure experience, they'll grow together.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us. Kevin Herr rant of the day is 5 minutes away. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motor Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
I got a question for you, Steve. We were talking about officiating earlier, and you had mentioned in the Penn State game, which I actually missed as well. As a matter of fact, I even sent you a text about it later in the evening, that the officials got it right with about 2:40 to go on the out-of-bounds play that led to a UCF first down. The clock does restart in that situation. It's only under 2 minutes. Does the clock not restart? I missed that one, but the Pac-12 is going to reprimand officials for the Arizona State-Wisconsin game issue.
Well, actually, Wisconsin has something to do with this, guys. I mean, he should have spiked the ball.
Well, I'm trying to find the full. I mean, it was such a bizarre setup. I'm not even sure how to describe it.
Well, he tried to center the ball up, and he went and he knelt down. Right?
So instead of spiking, he'd end up kneeling on it?
Yeah, he tried to kneel down on it. Right? And you're like, well, that doesn't stop the clock.
Yeah. Then I don't, that's what I said. That's why I don't understand why there's an issue with this.
Neither do I don't, a lot of people are saying they got hosed, but the way they did it was awkward. It was very awkward the way they did it. So Wisconsin didn't help the officials out by how awkward it was. I mean, it was really strange how he did it. Of course, I was trying to stay awake and watch the thing, but it, you know, at my age, you're lucky that you took it as far as you did.
Well, but you know, I'm kind of watching the video here on CBSSports.com, and he runs to the left and then spikes the football.
Right, but that doesn't do anything. That just puts the ball back where it was before.
Well, but by running to the left, though, wouldn't that be even intentional grounding then? Because you're not trying to spike the football. A spike is one step back and throw it into the ground.
Right.
So could they have called intentional grounding there?
Yeah, you can, because the ball does not go past the line of scrimmage.
Right.
I mean, you can break the tackle box, okay? If you break the tackle box and then throw the ball away, when you throw the ball away, it must cross the line of scrimmage.
Actually, I think to better describe what happens, he takes the ball, snaps it, runs to the left, almost like it's going to be a sweep, just down the line of scrimmage, gets to about where the tackle is, and doesn't really spike the ball, throw the ball, or anything. He just kind of sits the ball on the ground.
Yeah.
What he was trying to do was line it up for a field goal.
Sure.
Which, to be frank with you, is a fumble.
That's what I thought, too. If he doesn't throw it and he just lays it down, that should have been a fumble.
But you know what? Isn't there a rule that was adopted to negate the famous Nebraska fumble Ruski play?
Yeah, there
Which is a very similar situation.
There is, but this doesn't apply to this.
Okay.
That doesn't apply to this particular play. This time the ball's completely in the quarterback's hands. I mean, look, run the kid out, kick the field goal.
Yeah.
I mean, for goodness sakes.
Yep.
It was so bizarre that I couldn't understand. Like I said, the only thing I could see that the officials did wrong there was they didn't, like you said, call it a fumble or intentional grounding or anything, because it looked like a running play, and he just kneeled it down as you would if you had a timeout left to center it into the goalpost.
Yeah, I mean, look, they can reprimand the Pac-12 officials all they want. To be frank with you, Wisconsin, based on what I saw, has to take part of the blame here. As to what they did. I know Larry Scott reprimanded them, but I'll be frank with you. what Wisconsin did was bizarre.
Yeah.
I don't quite get what I think I know what the intent was, but I'm not so sure that that's the, you know, right. But they get a say properly administer the end of the situation and act appropriate urgency on the game's final play. This was an unusual situation at the end of the game, Scott said in the statement. After a thorough review, we have determined that the officials fell short of the high standard to which Pac-12 games were officiated. Trying to set his team up for the winning field goal, Wisconsin quarterback Joel Stave instead triggered a wave of confusion that lingered long after Arizona State's 32-30 win over the 20th-ranked Badgers. The final sequence was set up when Wisconsin, after forcing Arizona State to punt, got the ball at their own 17-yard line with a minute 36 to go, trailing by two. The Badgers quickly moved down the field, reaching the Sun Devils' 13-yard line with 18 seconds left. For crying out loud, it's a 29-yard field goal. Trot the dude out. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Having set-up kicker Kyle French, of course, he's missed the field goal in overtime here, hoping to set up Kyle French in the middle of the field for a potential winning field goal. Wisconsin called for Stave to run to his left from the right hash mark, take a knee, a play the Badgers have practiced numerous times. But after Stave went to a knee, he was clipped by one of his linemen and went down a bit awkwardly.
No, he wasn't clipped.
Well, I'm just telling you what the story says here. As he emphatically placed the ball on the 15-yard line. Stave hopped up quickly, and players from both teams stood around for a few seconds trying to figure out what happened. Because, believe me, it was so weird, I don't blame them. Stave checked with the referee to make sure that the play was dead, but Arizona State players piled on the ball thinking it was a fumble. Well, I'm sorry, but that's what you're trained to do. Okay? Realizing the clock was still running, the Badgers then tried to line up with 2 seconds left to spike the ball, but couldn't get the play off in time. Though the Sun Devils thought Stave's knee never hit the ground, replays show it briefly touched the turf, but the officials saw it, pointing to the ground to signal the play was dead. Even after the Sun Devils were pulled off the ball, one of the officials briefly held the Badgers at the line of scrimmage before that they could snap the ball, costing them even more time. Now, see, there's the problem. I hate when that happens.
Holding the play up.
If you're going to hold the play up, the clock has to stop. Okay? If you're going to hold the play up, the clock has to stop. That's where the failure comes in.
Sure.
After gathering on the field, the officials then trotted past Stave, Wisconsin coach Gary Anderson, and the rest of the stunned ball players. At the news conference, Anderson was asked whether he thought the Pac-12 statement was enough. To me personally, no. And I don't blame him. That's how I'd answer. Now, what they did was awkward.
I'll bet they never do that again.
Well, no, but I mean, what he has to do is he has to go down, boom,
get on a knee, bang, stop it, turn, hand the ball to the official. Line everybody up, then spike it. Okay, that's what you have to do. You just can't let the ball lay there.
No.
You have to keep command of the football yourself. Kneel down, bang, be emphatic about it. Get that thing down. That way they go, boom, dead right there. Turn, hand the ball to the officials. Now your guys only have to move back, 4 yards to now be properly lined up again so you can spike the ball?
But you're right. The big issue is when Arizona State players, their down linemen land on the football, the referee has to unpile them, or the umpire actually has to umpire them. The umpire has to unpile, and the referee does not call a timeout, an official timeout there.
And I'm guessing the Arizona State players took their time getting off that pile as long as they could.
And you can see this, by the way, at stevejonesshow.com. I just posted the link to the video so you can see it.
Yeah, they took their time doing it, which you don't blame them. But that's Stave's issue as well. Stave has to keep possession of the ball, put the knee down, and hand the ball to the official. Okay? That keeps them from jumping on the ball.
Yes.
Okay? And that's, so he's culpable in what happened.
And by the way, when you look that up on the Steve Jones page, you can also get involved in getting 2 tickets for Saturday's Kent State game.
Yes, we have the details. We have the details on our Steve Jones Facebook page, and we're going to do it a little differently this week.
Okay.
Listen to the show this week between 3 and 5. Simple enough. And then we are going to ask you a question on Thursday based on one of the shows this week. If you answer it correctly, you'll go to see Penn State, Kent State.
I think you should pick the Kevin Herr rant of the day and pick one. All right, what's your rant today?
I just led to it, though. my rant was regarding the weird ending to the Wisconsin-ASU game and the repercussions that are coming afterwards. We'll call it that.
I think the correct answer to get the tickets for Saturday's game is 20 minutes in the concession line at Shikellamy Stadium.
Oh, man.
Just a thought.
How many minutes was Kevin in line at Shikellamy Stadium to get Halushki on Friday night?
The answer was about 5 when I realized that airtime was coming. And actually, I was just getting some water. It's all I really wanted. But there were a lot of people that were taking advantage of some good food for dinner, and I was not able to get to the water, so I just went upstairs and we did the game.
Just as a quick aside to all of this, I just want to say that as of September 16th, the Pittsburgh Pirates are still in first place.
Yes, they are.
And I'm so pleased by that beyond description.
Playing great baseball. Marlon Byrd has added so much to them.
And Morneau came over from Minnesota, and I think he had a game-winning hit this weekend.
Yeah, he did.
And it's just music to my ears. And apparently there no other professional teams in the city of Pittsburgh other than the Pirates this season.
Well, the other part, too, is we're going to have one of the writers from the Pittsburgh Tribune Review on tomorrow to talk about.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
There is really, and I'm not exaggerating this or teasing, but there really is a Pirate fever going on in Pittsburgh.
Well, that's because they watched the first Steeler game this year. That's why there's Pirate fever.
No, I think it's because of the Pirates being so good.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, so I don't know. Oh, well.
I was hoping Kevin would have jumped in with some Steelers Cincinnati insights for tonight.
I'm just hoping the game is entertaining because I have not seen a Steeler game this year that has been entertaining. It's been frustrating. Annoying, depressing, and, I can't find any other negative words to describe it. Disappointing.
You're a half game out of first. All right.
So close.
Whoa.
Okay, let me explain. Can I explain to you the National Football League rules?
I know the National Football League rules, but when Jacksonville has an opportunity to score more points than you do in the first 2 weeks.
Let me explain to you the National Football League rules.
All right, go ahead.
Okay.
Yep.
If you end up with more W's than Baltimore, Cincinnati, or Cleveland,
right,
they let you go to the playoffs.
Right, but you only play them 2 times apiece.
Yes, but it's overall wins. Okay.
I understand.
So if I'm they aware. End up 9-7 and Baltimore's 8-8, guess which team's going?
Well, at this
if
rate.
If they end up 7-9 and Baltimore ends up 6-10 and Cincinnati 6-10 and Cleveland's 0-16, they might play Jacksonville. So they're one and 15.
It'll be like the AFC West all over again for a few years ago.
When you sit there and you listen, if you beat them out, you get to go. Seattle was 7-9 two years ago. They went to the playoffs. Okay? And hosted.
That was the bizarre part of that. They got the home field.
Meanwhile, gloomy Gus over here with one game down and 15 to go. He's paddling towards Shamokin Dam, and he's just letting the current take him.
As I remember correctly, my good friend in State College said, but don't worry, it's just the Titans. Where the Steelers put up a deuce for three quarters.
I have no stake in this, okay? Listening to you go off the deep end.
That's just your entertainment.
Well, pretty much, yeah. All right, we'll come back with more in a moment. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. So Jason Johnson posted on our Facebook page, which was terrific. He said he's outside the stadium, and they start playing Enter Sandman. His 7-year-old daughter looked at him and said, Daddy, your show's coming on.
That's the best.
No, sweetheart. Sometimes it's just the Enter Sandman is just because people like it, so they play it. But I thought that was one of the best quotes I've seen in a long time. Daddy, your show's coming on.
I've actually had that reaction sometimes going into places where I hear that where I hear it start, I reach for my headphones right away.
Exactly. Pavlovian response.
It's a Pavlovian response.
I mean,
Daddy, your show's coming on.
But to hear a 7-year-old do that, that's really good.
That's the best.
That's really good. And that's why I didn't realize Rivera used that as his theme, honestly, until I saw the All-Star game.
I didn't either. Don't feel bad.
I didn't know that. The Red Sox did something really nice from last night. They have the numbers that they put up on the board for pitchers. So what the Red Sox did was they took the number 42 that they put in the pitcher slot. And, of course, he's the only 42 left. He's the last player to ever wear 42 in the history of the game. And the entire Red Sox team, from management to managers to coaches to players, all signed the number 42 that they put up on the scoreboard in left field for him, and they gave it to him as a gift. Now, other people gave him rocking chairs and things like that. That's something where that's very personal because that's the only one that's been put up on that scoreboard for years now. Because, other 42s have retired, but they were position players. That 42 for pitching has been exclusively his in that scoreboard for a long time. And, everything's handheld there. So they take and they hook and they place it on. And for them to do that, that's one heck of a personal gift. That's different because, everybody gives something. You want to make it more personalized, and that I think it's the best one I've seen.
Yeah, but would they do that if it was 92-59 and the Yankees were a game behind them?
they would have.
I know. I was just joking.
Because you want to know why? In 2005, he gave up the Bill Miller base hit up the middle, and Robert, he walked Millar. Roberts ran for him. Roberts stole second. Bill Miller, who had homered to beat Rivera earlier in the year in extra innings, singled up the middle, Robert scored. And from there, we know that they made history. All right. And in 2005, opening day was against the Yankees, and the Red Sox got all their rings. Well, of course, on opening day, they introduced the two teams. Well, when Rivera was introduced, he got this standing ovation. And he... And he took his cap off and he doffed his cap and smiled and waved at everybody. And at that moment, he endeared himself to the Boston fans. That he handled it with such grace, humility, and humor. Everybody's like, you know what? That dude's cool. And that's why, you know, from 2005 on, because the last few times he's come in to pitch this year at Fenway, they've given him a standing ovation. Just in recognition for the great career he's had. He's the greatest single closer in the history of the game, with bar none. I mean, the Red Sox tried to sign him 2 years ago.
You know, there's some sports writers throughout the country, and probably only a handful, who have this notion that they will never vote for somebody for the Hall of Fame on the first ballot.
Right.
Well, they better reconsider that when it comes to him.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of guys. They need to reconsider that.
Exactly. I mean, of all people, I mean, gee.
But, I mean, Hank Aaron didn't. Willie Mays didn't. Mantle didn't. Ted Williams didn't. I mean, none of them, not one of them, has ever been able to get through first ballot, you know, where it's unanimous. I mean, Cal Ripken did it. I mean, none of them did. And after a while, you just sit back and realize, I mean, Hank Aaron didn't?
Yeah.
Aaron?
Oh, gee.
Okay.
It's a power trip thing now. That's all it is a power trip thing.
Yeah. But that was a great classy thing that the Red Sox did.
Right. Johnny Bench did. I mean, Mariano Rivera should be a first ballot Hall of Famer. Derek Jeter should be a first ballot. You know, Rivera should be unanimous. Jeter should be unanimous. Okay, there's certain guys that fall into that category. And those are two guys right away that fall into that category that deserve that kind of recognition for the great careers that they've had. I mean, I hear people debating Ichiro being in the Hall of Fame. Really? Jeez. Are you kidding me? I hear people debating David Ortiz because he's only a DH. Well, I'm sorry, but when the money was on the table, I saw the ball going that way. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sudbury.